Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. The Nigerian-American writer Teju Cole once described his concept of home as fourfold. After Lagos and New York City, he is most at home wherever there is a good Wi-Fi connection and whenever he is among cosmopolitan people, in a place where people of different backgrounds figure out how to inhabit the same space and have the same rights and respect as everyone else.
We've been talking about the so-called cosmopolitan canopy on today's show, a term coined by the urban ethnographer Elijah Anderson. Anderson spent time observing and interviewing people in Philadelphia's Center City, a place that included historical landmarks, cultural centers, park spaces, and markets. He explored the lessons that can be drawn in his book, The Cosmopolitan Canopy, Race and Civility in Everyday Life. He explained his research to Lake Effect's Mayon Silver.
Well, I'm an ethnographer, which means I study people. I study culture. I study the way people come together and make sense of their lives. And the canopy, say the cosmopolitan canopy, is this island of civility located in a sea of racial segregation. And people in the canopy basically behave themselves as comity. There's goodwill. There's civility. It's an island of civility located in a sea of segregation. And there are two kinds of people in the under the canopy. There are people who are deeply ethnocentric and people who are cosmopolitan. And sometimes it operates in the same person. People code switch. But it's this place of cultural convergence. And it's a place where people come sometimes for a respite from the tensions of everyday life in these other settings. Philadelphia is a very segregated city. But the Center City is quite racially mixed, quite diverse. And Rittenhouse Square or the Reading Terminal Market, and there are other spaces, too, that reflect this diversity.
People come to know each other in these cosmopolitan canopies through folk ethnography. I was going to ask you what that is.
Well, it's kind of people watching. Well, we all do it. We all make sense of people and situations. And it's a fun thing to do sometimes. Folk ethnography is a way for people to know what's going on, to sort of understand their world. And it doesn't mean that they're always right. It doesn't mean that they're always correct in what they assume or what they see. But it's a way for them to make sense of people and situations, you see, and places.
And is that one of the reasons that a cosmopolitan canopy in a city is so important? Because it gives people the opportunity to watch other people that aren't like them, in a sense, in some ways?
Well, it's an area of convergence. It's an area of cultural convergence. You have old people, young people, black people, white people, Asians, Muslims, Jewish people, WASP, all kinds of people come together under the canopy. And usually there's some reason, like it's a market or something like that, or it's just a park that people like and they come there and it's a pleasant space. It's a metaphor, really, for civil society. Civil society. This is the society that our ministers and teachers and parents encouraged us to participate in as small children. They try to bring us upright, that kind of thing. And the idea is to be pleasant and polite to strangers or people who are sharing that space with you, that kind of thing. And so the canopy exemplifies that kind of a setting, civil society.
And it's also important that the space belongs to all kinds of people, right?
Right, and that's the civil society, you see.
So can you describe some of the things in society that cause cosmopolitan canopies to be something that is not necessarily out of the ordinary, but unique? What is the rest of society? What's going on there?
Well, I mean, Philadelphia is a very segregated place. There are white spaces, black spaces, and there are racially mixed spaces. And these spaces are in flux, changing from white to black, black to white. But the canopy is a mixed space, and it's also a perceptual category. Not everybody sees it the same way, but they do feel it. And sometimes you have to go to the canopy just to get a dose of humanity. At least I do sometimes. I know the Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia is a wonderful place, as is the Reading Terminal Market. And every city has at least one or two of these places. Some have more. I can count about six of these spaces in Philadelphia and in Center City and other places. And they play off of one another. You know, there's a kind of synergistic effect. And from that synergy comes this cosmopolitan zone, as it were. So there's a sense in which Center City, Philadelphia, is this cosmopolitan zone, you see. But, you know, New Haven has maybe one or two of these spaces. New York, if you have the street corners like a canopy, there's such a diversity of people. And they're getting on in the sense of being civil to one another, which is superficial to be sure, but they are typically civil to one another. Now the canopy itself, it's diverse, it's mixed, all kinds of people are there, and people are basically, as I say, civil to one another. But the canopy does have fault lines, and once in a while, a fault line will erupt, and there'll be a problem.
You had a chapter in your book, The Color Line and the Canopy,
mm-hmm.
and you referred back to 1903 when W.E.B. Du Bois wrote that the problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line.
Right.
And can you explain why that was prescient and what some of the ways that that persists today?
Well, in 1903, the color line was very bright, so to speak, and people knew it. People sort of understood it, and black people certainly knew when they weren't wanted. They knew where they weren't wanted. They knew their place, so to speak, and white people tended to keep them in that place, you see. And we're talking about really the emergence of the so-called the iconic ghetto. Now, the iconic ghetto is this place in cities where people assume black people live, you see. And this goes back to slavery. After slavery, which established the black body at the bottom of the order. As black people migrated after the Civil War, they approached cities north and south. And when they arrived in number, they were oftentimes contained in certain areas of the city. And other people in these spaces, oftentimes ethnic minorities and folks, tended to distance themselves from blacks. And the cities tended to contain blacks in certain areas, you see, and these became black spaces, and these have morphed into ghetto communities to this day. So the city today can be seen as being comprised of black space, white space, and racially mixed space. And whereas in the past, the color line was oftentimes quite clear. Because of the big changes that have occurred over the years, especially the incorporation process that happened after the civil rights movement, and what we have now, we have black people everywhere. People are doctors and lawyers, and they live in the larger society. But at the same time, there are issues, and black people who move about in the larger society once in a while run into this moment of acute disrespect based on their blackness. And that happens under the canopy. It doesn't happen all the time, but it happens on occasion. And that's when the canopy itself gets rented. And then it has to repair itself, so to speak, and people try to do that by trying to pay attention to what caused the tear. And so the color line is more emergent today, it seems, than it was back in the days of W.E.B. Du Bois. And it's that moment of acute disrespect when that's when the color line is drawn today. So there's a difference between what is going on now and what was happening in the days of Du Bois.
Well, society has opened in some ways, but there still remains some entrenched structural problems.
Well, we've come a long way. I mean, in this country, we've come a long way since slavery, but we have a very long way to go. And under the canopy, there are essentially two types of people. I talk about this in my book. There are people who are deeply, deeply cosmopolitan, meaning they appreciate all kinds of people. And these are oftentimes people who are educated, who've been exposed to different kinds of people, who've grown up with an orientation of acceptance of difference and diversity, that kind of thing. And oftentimes, as I say, these people are not only better educated, but they're oftentimes more privileged. At the same time, there are people who are deeply, deeply ethnocentric, if not parochial. And when they come to the canopy, they're oftentimes provoked, disturbed, what have you. But the canopy as a space encourages people to be civil. It encourages a kind of cosmopolitanism, so to speak, a cosmopolitan orientation. And so the people who are deeply, deeply ethnocentric might have difficulty operating under the canopy, whereas the people who are deeply cosmopolitan can feel at home. But the people who are deeply ethnocentric sometimes have to stretch in order to meet the norms of the canopy. And there comes a moment, there comes a time when people who are ethnocentric and who are presenting themselves as cosmopolitan, sometimes they can feel like they've had enough. They become stressed out maybe when they see diversity of a certain sort or people out of their supposed place. And this is when they act out, or the gloss begins to erode, the social gloss, that is. And this tension emerges. And so the people who are marginalized, whether they're black people or whether they're Muslims or whether they're Jewish or whether they're gay or whether they're women or whoever it is, with a difference, these people can feel insulted, you see, and marginalized. And that's that moment of acute disrespect. And that's when the color line or the line is drawn between and among groups, you see. And there's tension there. But the canopy oftentimes recovers, and people learn from the experience, and they move on. But this is not usual in civil society and under the canopy. The canopy is a beautiful place, but there are fault lines, you see.
Yes, and you write about how, especially for young black males, there's when people are doing this folk ethnography or this people watching, you wrote about how in public, stereotypically, white skin color is associated with respectability, civility, trust, and black color is associated with poverty, danger, and distrust, above all with regards to anonymous young males. But at the same time, there's in the cosmopolitan canopy, there's a sense of it's characterized by its sense of safety. And so people let down their guard a little bit in the canopy and they feel comfortable to explore, to let their fears down and that type of thing.
That's right. Well, as black people navigate the white space, or as they navigate the cosmopolitan space, because of this iconic ghetto that hovers overhead, they move about in this space with a deficit of credibility. That is, people are not convinced that they're not from the ghetto, so to speak. The iconic ghetto, as I mentioned, is a very powerful, powerful source of stereotype, prejudice, and discrimination. And this hovers over the canopy, you see.
Well, and in your book, you do, you know, personal anecdotes from people, and you talk to people, and you talk to people from the iconic ghetto, from the gallery in an area in Philadelphia that's predominantly African American, and you talk about that there's a humanity. I mean, everybody has a humanity, and everybody has things to share and things to add to society. And, you know, you talk about people that may not feel comfortable going into the gallery, but there are other, for instance, white people that may be more open or accepted to that kind of thing.
Right. People who are somewhat culturally sophisticated and open, and there are people who are closed, who are more ethnocentric. And the ones who are cosmopolitan oftentimes are much more able to be tolerant and respectful of difference. And people who are deeply, deeply ethnocentric or even parochial have a more difficult time with that. In fact, the canopy is this place where the cosmopolitan person can feel at home. The ethnocentric person of any race might feel challenged under the canopy, you see. And so there's a sense in which the norms of the canopy spread, and because of the power of those norms, the most ethnocentric person sometimes tries to pass as cosmopolitan, you know, and they do this by painting themselves in a kind of gloss, and which deflects scrutiny, and they act real nice and they're pleasant and all that, until they don't, until they've had enough, until they're so provoked that that they draw the color line in their minds, or they look for allies, and pretty soon there can be tension. So it isn't a place without its issues. I mean, it is a place where all different kinds of people come. It's a beautiful place when it's working. At the same time, there are fault lines.
When that kind of ties into, I was wondering why it's important that racial separateness is not Philadelphia's only story and not Milwaukee's only story, that there are these cosmopolitan canopies.
Exactly. No, as I said before, the canopy is an island of civility located in a sea of segregated living, you see. And it's a place for various kinds of people come together. It's a place of convergence. It's a place where old people, young people, black people, white people, Jewish people, Muslims, all kinds of people come together under the canopy. And typically, things are fine. But these spaces do have fault lines.
Thank you very much, Professor Anderson, for speaking about this. It's a fascinating book, and it really ties into what's going on in Milwaukee.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on your program.
Elijah Anderson is a professor of sociology at Yale University. His book is called The Cosmopolitan Canopy, Race and Civility in Everyday Life. He spoke with Lake Effect's Mayon Silver, and there is more on his work at WUWM.com.